Well, hi everyone. My name is Louis Bauer. I'm from Carnegie Mellon. I am not an author of this paper, but it turns out that neither of the authors of this paper could make it here. Unfortunately, one of them was scheduled to be away somewhere in Asia, and the other one had visa difficulties, which prevented him from entering the United States. But one of the authors of the papers happened to know me, and so I got conscripted to give this talk. So I will ask you to look past the bumbling presentation to what is good about the work. And I do know something about the methodology, so if you have questions about that, I can try to address those. So this paper is also somewhat different than the last couple that were presented, in that the last couple of papers that were presented, the work was trying to come up with a new algorithm or a new way of doing something versus in this paper, what this paper is about is really an exploration of the state of affairs in a particular setting. In particular, this paper is going to look at the sharing of health-related information in online social networks like Facebook, and it's going to try to get a sense through a survey of how much sharing is going on, what kind of things people are sharing with whom, what kind of sharing people feel is most privacy sensitive, and if they have privacy concerns, if people who are doing the sharing have privacy concerns about sharing, how do they address them? What do they do? The outline of the talk is kind of straightforward. I'll spend a bunch of time at the beginning sort of trying to motivate the problem. Then I'll briefly talk about methodology by itself, and then I'll talk about methodology in a little bit more detail as I go through the results. Okay, so the build-up. There has been a bunch of work that shows that sharing health-related information is beneficial, both for the person who is doing the sharing and for the people with whom this information is shared. Now, there are lots of examples of this. One example is sharing information about attempting to lose weight and diets and experiences regarding that. That provides a kind of social pressure that helps people lose weight. Another example is that people often go online to try to learn something about their own health from people's experiences, right? So that's an example of how I can learn from somebody else's experience. That is, the recipient of the sharing is the one who benefits. And also, in many cases, the sharing itself is beneficial in terms of providing social support or some sort of social therapy to the person doing the sharing. Okay, so lots of this kind of, there are good reasons to be sharing health-related information. Just as a sanity check, let's briefly talk about or give examples of health-related information so we're on the same page there. Health-related information covers a wide range of types of information that can be grouped together into various categories. This is kind of an example of a set of categories that the authors used. Here, for example, one category has to do with healthy living, so that might be things like exercise routines, healthy eating, dietary information, and so on. Another category is medical health records. So as you can imagine, this might be things like x-rays, insurance policy numbers, personal identification numbers, details of treatments and prescriptions, and so on. Another category is useful health-related information resources. This can be information that may be normally found in places like Wikipedia or books and articles, so on and so forth. So traditionally, health-related information has been shared in some sort of narrow context where the social context was designed for sharing maybe a specific kind of health-related information. But these days, online social networks are taking over in terms of being the new place where people talk about everything, and consequently, people are starting to talk about health-related information in these settings as well. So there have been a couple of studies that haven't examined this in great detail, but that clearly reveal that the sharing health-related information is something that goes on to an increasing extent in online social networks. Okay, so when we talk about sharing health-related information, in particular on online social networks, that is a medium that is potentially accessible to many, it is natural to start thinking about and worrying about privacy concerns and managing those. So there are many definitions of privacy. According to one definition, privacy is a dynamic boundary regulation process. And what that means is that people have some notion of the privacy that they desire, and then they try to minimize the difference between the privacy that they are actually achieving through some behavior and this privacy that they desire. And this, you can see immediately how this might be very applicable to sharing health-related information, right? There are certain things that you're worried about, the behaviors that you engage in might cause you to achieve a different level of privacy than you wish for, and you try to sort of bring these in line as much as possible. And these are brought in line by, of course, adjusting your behaviors, maybe by sharing less or sharing with different people or obfuscating the information that is being shared. So people interpret privacy in very individual ways. Something that is private to me might not be private to you. And when we go into the details of why something is private or how to manage privacy expectations, these might be very different between us. So they're different partly because we base them on knowledge and previous experiences. So one of the things that this paper looks at is try to get a sense for how people do this kind of privacy management. That is how they perceive risks differently, and then how they respond to those risks. Okay, so the recap of the motivation is, well, we know that sharing HRI is beneficial to both the people doing the sharing and the recipients. We know that there's an increasing amount of this going on in online social networks. And we know that there are people will have privacy concerns that they will try to address in different ways. So the research questions that this paper tries to address is to try to understand what are the HRI sharing practices in online social networks today. That is, what kind of HRI is being shared, how often, why is it being shared. And another research question is, how do online social networks users perceive privacy risks? And finally, what kind of behaviors do they engage in to mitigate those risks? So the methodology is actually one piece of this work that I'm reasonably familiar with, because I've done work that follows similar methodology. So what the authors did is that they performed a survey on Amazon's Mechanical Turk. How many of you are familiar with Mechanical Turk? Okay, maybe half. So Mechanical Turk is this crowdsourcing service that is run by Amazon. It basically offers an easy way for people who need certain tasks performed to publish a description of those tasks, and for people who are willing to do tasks of that nature to go find the tasks and do them in exchange for money. And Amazon provides sort of the features like matching up, giving people a venue to publish the tasks, making it possible to easily exchange money and do this in an anonymous fashion, so that the people who have work that needs to be done never need to know who actually did the work. So this is an ideal environment in some sense for doing user studies, and it's become a really popular environment for that kind of use. In this particular survey, the Mechanical Turk workers were asked about demographic information and their usage of online social networks, about the HRI sharing practices on online social networks, and about perceived risks and risk mitigating behaviors. So the flow of the survey was, of the whole study, was that workers were recruited in this case through a third-party service that uses Amazon's Mechanical Turk, because Amazon's Mechanical Turk is only for people in the United States, and the authors are in Canada, so they had to go through a third-party organization that did this soliciting on Mechanical Turk for them. A job was posted on Mechanical Turk that had instructions and a link to the online survey. When people took the survey, they were given a code or an identifier, and they could paste this code back into Mechanical Turk to get paid. They were paid $1 for taking the survey. The survey took something like 10, 15 minutes, and $1 is about the amount that people commonly get paid for those kinds of things on Mechanical Turk. Okay, so now I'll go through the results, and for each part of the results, I'll also talk about the details of what questions we're being asked to generate those results. So to begin with, the study sought to look at what kind of health-related information was commonly shared on online social networks. Right? So to do that, the authors could have asked participants in the study, they could have presented them with a list of 50 different types of health-related information, but that might have led to the participants sort of losing focus and starting to answer in ways that don't really represent their true opinion or their true behavior. So what the authors did is that they categorized health-related information into 8 categories and then asked about those 8 categories. Now, of course, it's important that these 8 categories are somewhat consistent, that people have a somewhat consistent understanding of what these 8 categories are. Otherwise, who knows what the results mean. So to try to make sure that the categories actually make sense, the authors ran a pre-study where they collected 11 participants to whom they essentially gave little, in the context of a program, they gave them labels for a bunch of different fine-grained types of health-related information that could be shared, and they asked them to group these into 8 categories. And it turned out that a reasonable number of participants came up with categories that very closely resembled the 8 categories that the authors also came up with. And so these were the 8 categories that they asked about in the survey. So their conclusion from this pre-study was that their categorization was reasonable. It was a way of coming up with a reasonable categorization. So these are the categories. I won't go through them in detail, but there's the healthy living category that I mentioned. There's the own experience category, which is the person's, the sharers or potential sharers' own experience with surgeries, treatments, side effects, and so on. Useful information I mentioned previously. Mental and emotional health conditions are whether a person is what kind of mental state the person is in, say, sad, happy, excited. Similarly, for physical health conditions, medical records, again, is kind of easy to understand. That's what contains very, very detailed information about the person's health state. And then there are also two interesting ones are other people's experiences. So this is relating not one's own experience, but experience of other people that you might know. And health-related information of people in your custody. So this is like elderly parents or children. And it turns out that these two are pretty interesting later. In terms of demographics, the participants were restricted to being in the United States. So Amazon's Mechanical Turk does have workers from all over the world, but often for studies that are, for example, about privacy, something that is depending, that is to some degree context dependent, it might be desirable to study people from only one environment. So here the environment was chosen to be the United States. There were 166 among the participants. There were 166 active online social network users from many different states. A little bit about the demographics. The sample skewed, it didn't really skew. The sample was very slightly larger, had slightly more females than males. In terms of age range, it skewed slightly young, with about 60% of the people, of the participants, being in the 19 to 29 age group. It was a more educated sample than is typical for the United States. I think the latest statistic I read said that something like 29% of people in the United States have a college degree or above, and here it's something like 50% or slightly more. But that's relatively standard for Mechanical Turk workers, which tend to skew more educated and younger than the population in the US. The employment categories varied. This was not people who were just somehow particularly IT savvy or particularly privacy aware. It was people from a wide range of occupations. So one of the things, two questions that one might ask is this sample representative and can we generalize results from it? I guess the answer is twofold. On the one hand, sure, the sample is actually not completely representative of the United States population, so you can't generalize too much. But on the other hand, the authors actually don't seek to generalize. They're just trying to seek to take a first step towards a broad understanding of what kind of sharing is going on. And maybe this understanding that they achieve ought to be followed up with more precise studies that try to understand more specific, perhaps sharing by specific groups or of specific types of health-related information. But in general, Mechanical Turk, many people have doubted in the past whether Mechanical Turk is a good venue for attracting people to user studies. But and so a bunch of meta studies have been done about how good a venue Mechanical Turk is how good are the results achieved by running studies on Mechanical Turk. And it's been found that as long as you are reasonably careful, the results that you obtain are as high quality as the results that you obtain through normal methods, like studying the people in your city or at your university or something along those lines. So it's become more or less accepted as a vehicle for doing doing surveys and studies. A little bit about the online social network characteristics of the participants. Only about 40% had exactly one social network account. Most of them had many more social network accounts. In fact, over 96% of them had Facebook accounts, but quite a number of them had three or four social network accounts that they use somewhat regularly. And the vast majority of them logged into their online social network accounts every day. So then participants were asked how often they share health-related information on online social networks. They were asked to respond on a 5-point Likert scale, ranging from never to always. So the results look something like this. On the x-axis are the different HRI categories. So each set of graphs describes the sharing of one HRI category. And really, I think the way to look at these is to look at the leftmost bar in each group separately from everything else. So because the leftmost bar in each group says what percentage of people never want to share information in that category. So what this, for example, says is that when we look at medical health records, 63% of the people surveyed just think that they never would want to share health-related information that belongs to this category, right? Versus the 36.7% remaining would share it. Well, almost nobody would share it always, but they would share it on occasion. So what's kind of interesting here is that there are these couple of these categories of information where people seem to be somewhat unlikely to share, right? From 40 to 60% of people would never share their medical health records, somebody else's experiences, and the health-related information of people in their custody. This is kind of, it's to be expected that these are the categories which might be most privacy-sensitive. But it's also interesting that even for these most privacy-sensitive categories of health-related information, 40 to 60% of the time people would want to share it. Right? So even for the most privacy-sensitive types of health-related information, there is a pretty strong desire and presumably intention to at least occasionally share it. The other interesting thing is that for all these other categories of health-related information, only a small minority would never share it. Right? So for these less sensitive kinds of health-related information, there's an overwhelming desire to share at least occasionally. So participants were asked why they share health-related information. They were presented with a list of options from which to choose to answer this question. Some of the ones that were most popular are to help others by sharing personal experience or knowledge, to seek help or get social support, and to get benefits from the people that they know in an online context. People were also asked to indicate why did they not share health-related information or did not want to share health-related information for the categories of health-related information that they indicated they would never share. The most common answer was to indicate that there was a difference between the people, the group of people that somebody associated with in the online social network context and that they associate with somehow in real life, and that the people that they associated with in an online social network context were just not a set of people that were particularly trustworthy in this sense. And there was a non-trivial set of people, well, a pretty large fraction of people who just didn't believe in sharing health-related information. But again, one might have expected that this would have been 90%, so the fact that it's 40% is somewhat interesting. So then the survey went on to look at what were the key factors that affected people's perceptions of privacy risk. And so people were asked, the particular four factors that were considered were who was the recipient of information, what the HRI category was, which online social network it was shared on, and what health conditions the individual who was doing the sharing had at the time of the sharing. So basically, participants were asked to indicate, again, on a 5-point Likert scale, how much each one of these factors would affect their perceived privacy risks if they were to share information. It turned out that over 85% of participants thought that all these factors were quite important, and the factors that seemed to be the most important were who was the recipient and what was the HRI category. So in particular, which online social network information was being shared on wasn't so important, and also it wasn't so important what health conditions the individual had at the time of sharing. Again, we're talking about how participants perceive risk. So further in understanding people's perception of risk, they were asked on a 5-point Likert scale for each HRI category to indicate how risky they thought it was to share information in that category, in particular, either with select individuals or with select groups or with everybody they know on Facebook or just everybody on Facebook. So this is per category and per type of sharing. These results show up in the graph more or less. This is the graph that shows the result. Each line represents a particular category of health information. The x-axis represents the different breadths at which the information is shared, and the y-axis is the percentage of participants who thought that sharing this information with this group of people was extremely risky. So one thing that shows up is that clearly, and as one would expect, the more people information is shared with, that is, as we move from the left to the right on the x-axis, the more likely it is that participants will think that this kind of sharing is risky, right? It makes sense that if we share health-related information with everybody, that's more risky than sharing health-related information with just a few individuals. What's also interesting is that if we look at the difference between sharing information with a few select individuals versus a few groups on a social network, there isn't that much difference in perceived risk. So I find this one kind of interesting because it's been shown a few times that people create their own groups on social networks, right? They create a group called close friends and then assign individuals to that group, and then instead of sharing with individuals, they might share with the group called close friends. Now, it's been shown in a few studies that people lose track pretty easily of who is in what group, right? So it could easily be the case that for a particular group that they share with, they've forgotten who exactly is in that set of people, right? But this particular result indicates that they aren't worried about, they are about as unworried about sharing with a group as they are with sharing with individuals, and that might be a cause for some concern for people who think it's important to protect health-related information. The same categories that showed up as particularly privacy-sensitive previously all again here show as particularly privacy-sensitive, that is medical health records and HRI of people in one's custody, followed by the experience of other people. Let's see, anything else in this graph? I think that's more or less it. I think the differences in how what fraction of people perceived the different kinds of sharing as extremely risky were statistically significant in almost all cases, except a few cases down here. Right. So the last thing that was investigated is to see how people would respond to how people would try to manage their privacy, particularly at different risk levels. So participants were allowed to select from among the following options. They were allowed to indicate that they would manage their privacy better by not sharing or by manipulating shared data, by changing the recipient list, by sharing on none of the social networks, or by just agreeing that they'll take the risk and not worry about it too much. Previous studies that tried to categorize people by sharing profile categorized them as indifferent, cautious, or self-revealing, where indifferent meant that they would always share, cautious that they would almost never share, and self-revealing that they would use some sort of risk mitigation strategy while sharing, that is, share something or share something but not everything or only with some people. And this was consistent with what was found in this survey, again, that people fall into these three categories. In particular, one example is at the acceptable risk level. So this was one of the five steps in the Likert scale from not risky at all to extremely risky. Acceptable was the second least risky. So at the acceptable risk level, about 50% of the participants categorized themselves as self-revealing according to how they indicated they would manage their privacy. That is, they indicated that they would take some steps to try to make sure that the privacy they achieve matches what they desire. Okay, so that brings us to the end. Just to put this a little bit in context of previous studies in roughly in this space either focused on some small set of users, a narrower set of users, or didn't study social networks in general. So in this study, the authors quantified sharing practices of health-related information in online social networks. They looked at what were the key factors affecting privacy perception, and they did this with an eye towards sort of forming a baseline for future more detailed studies. Some of the findings are that people are particularly concerned about sharing information that's in these categories of medical health records and HRIF people in their custody. And the key factors that affect the perceived privacy risk are the recipient, that is the people with whom something is shared, and the HRI category of information. And the study also found that there's a large fraction of people who engage in some sometimes sophisticated risk mitigating behavior, such as changing the content that's being shared or going to some effort to decide with whom the content is being shared before going and doing it. So among the future work is more detailed investigations where instead of being asked in the abstract about what they would do, one might see participants being presented with very concrete scenarios and then asking them how they would respond to these very concrete scenarios. So that might get a more realistic answer from them. Participants also could be placed directly in the context of sharing HRI, so not talking about what they would do when they were sharing HRI on Facebook sometime this year, but actually perhaps building extension and application into Facebook such that they could be observed posting a piece of health-related information, and then that could become part of a study, or that is something that they could then be asked questions about. Also motivating factors could be brought into the picture specifically, namely people share for many reasons, and maybe their understandings of privacy and perceptions of risk are different depending on the reason they have for sharing information. And this study sort of grouped everybody together regardless of why they shared. It might be interesting to look at that in detail. All right, thanks very much, and I can try to take questions.
Yes.
Tony DeBora from Johns Hopkins. Two questions, comments. One is that it struck me that this could very well go into the category of what people say they do and what people actually do are two very different things. And maybe that's implied in the future work here, and I certainly hope that perhaps a study, a methodology could be considered for actually going out and exploring what people really do on these social networks in terms of this kind of information sharing.
Yeah. I think I certainly agree with that. I think the authors agree with that too. And I think their understanding for the place of this is that we haven't even asked people what they would do, much less figured out what they actually do. So at least asking them what they do is a first step towards this.
That could be very interesting. Yeah. Secondly, maybe I interpreted the question in the survey incorrectly about the never, sometimes, always, and so forth. But especially with the demographics, with the younger people, or perhaps healthy people. If someone's relatively healthy and you ask how often do you report your health information, they say never or sometimes. It really should be a given your health. So perhaps asking, have you had a health situation in the last year? And then given that, have you shared that?
Yeah, I think that's related also to this point of motivating factors. Yes, I agree, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Thank the speaker again.